Welcome to the X-Men TAS podcast. I'm Sonia.
And I'm Willie.
And this week we're going to talk about episode 3, Enter Magneto.
Cool. But, Sonia, before we do that...
A little housekeeping stuff, right?
Yes, a little housekeeping stuff. First, please subscribe to the podcast, rate us 5 stars. That'd be really helpful if you enjoy what you're listening to. Second, I would encourage you to search us out on Facebook. We have a new Facebook group. It's called X-Men TAS Podcast. You can just search it. And third, we had a really interesting interaction on Twitter this week. You'll never guess who helped us out.
I mean, I already know, so.
Right, you know, but the audience doesn't know. Julia and Eric Lewald.
Is it Lewald or Lewald?
That's a good question. Let's just say both, so we don't...
Okay.
we'll either offend them twice or not at all. They run a Twitter called @XMenTAS, pretty simple, mm-hmm. and a website, XMenTAS.com. They are writers from the show.
Right, from the X-Men, the animated series, right?
Right, and they're on Twitter, and they're especially active right now because... it was kind of a surprise to me, and it probably shouldn't have been, that it's the 25th anniversary of the show's initial run.
Right.
And first things, that just shows how old we are now, which
that's
is...
That's right. That's the silver anniversary, right?
yes. That's pretty sad. It's the Quicksilver anniversary. yeah. And they are writing a book about the series that's going to come out this summer. And I'm extremely excited about this book.
Yeah,
it's
really cool.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. Everyone should go to their website, xmentas.com, and you should all pre-order that book as soon as possible. That's what we're going to do. Mm-hmm. So, again, thank you to Eric and Julia. They're amazing.
Yeah, we're big fans.
Okay, now to the business at hand. Episode 3, Enter Magneto.
He enters.
He enters. We watch. Things happen.
Yeah. So he enters in this big magnetic bubble that he's generating for himself, crashes into Beast's cell block where he's reading a book fully clothed in a prison outfit.
And he makes a really ominous introduction where when you first see him, his face is shadowed in black, which is a really cool image for the show. I don't think the show gets much cooler than that.
Yeah,
going forward, artistically anyway.
Atmospheric, yeah.
Right. And, you know, Magneto is all about busting Beast out of prison. He's getting right down to business. He's like, come on.
Yeah. I mean, how does he doesn't know Beast. Like, they don't know each other at that point,
He
right?
knows that Beast is a prominent mutant arrested trying to break into the mutant control agency.
So you think he just saw Beast on the news and was like, I gotta get to that guy.
Yeah, definitely. He's
spring him from jail.
A brother in arms that I have to free.
Right.
And it's interesting because Beast casually drops that it was Xavier who had sent him on that mission.
Right, which is a big surprise to Magneto.
Yeah, it's real. The intrigue is very high in this level all around.
Right. But even at that stage, it's like Magneto's... It's almost like he's actively recruiting, right? He's coming to get mm-hmm. Beast out of jail because he wants him, like, for the cause. Well, and he can't even, like, fathom that Beast is not going to be... For Magneto's own cause.
Right, yeah. Magneto is in full crusade mode with his shiny red helmet and his, you know, purple cape and red outfit.
Right.
He is completely driven by his ideology.
Which is basically just to wipe out humans. He feels like mutants are the best, humans suck.
No, there's a little more emotion behind it and more pathos
and more
justification. I mean, that's what's cool about the show. Magneto is presented not as a typical mustache-twirling villain.
Right.
He is a villain who thinks that he is right and righteous.
Yeah.
And in many ways, they show a lot of sympathetic qualities of Magneto, which are sort of touched on in this episode.
That's true. They do the flashback scene... When Professor X is kind of explaining that they know each other from that medical facility where they're healing people together, and it does make you more sympathetic towards Magneto.
Yeah, and it's our first major origin scene where we see a young Professor X and a young Magneto, and we discover, unlike the movies, that Professor X was quite bald as a youth. And Magneto was much skinnier. You know, they show him walking away in anger at some point and transforming into Magneto, and he becomes quite muscular. So he really, like, hits the gym after he decides to wage a war on all humanity.
Well, of course, you have to be really strong to wage war.
I mean, he's already strong with his powers, but he also has to start lifting weights, too.
Listen.
He protects himself in a shield. He's not really punching people that
much.
This
is going back to that same conversation we had about the X-Men themselves, right? They are definitely working out a lot because they're superheroes and supervillains, and they need muscles to deal with it.
Okay, fine. I'll deal with it. I do think that they're using steroids. But... but, you know, I think that origin scene's really great because you get the first glimpse into Professor X really explaining what his philosophy is and Magneto countering with his philosophy. Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't know, I find it just really touching in a really fundamental way.
It's super humanizing on both sides because mm-hmm. as the viewer you can really sympathize with both sides of
right.
it. Even though, like, the end result is that Magneto is totally crazy and just wants to kill all humans,
right.
basically.
But he is,
but
like, a Holocaust victim.
Right, exactly. It comes from a place of, like, deep hurt and anguish that, like, anybody, like, watching that origin story could understand
Magneto,
to some extent.
Magneto's living an Inglorious Bastards lifestyle.
Yeah.
He's just... you know, out for, like, sweet revenge on any Nazi he can find. But he sort of transfers his hate of Nazis onto humanity in general, which, you know, human beings, if we're being honest, aren't the best. They don't have the best track record overall. But I'm really also touched by Professor X's elucidation of his philosophy, which is just he believes in peace. And brotherhood, and I think it's a real sort of remnant of the 1960s, because if you go back, like I have as a weird history nerd, and just watch President Kennedy's speeches from that era, he made so many amazing speeches about the need for peace and working towards real peace, not as a dream or as an ideal, but very practically, mm-hmm. and the importance of it for the future of mankind. And, you know, the X-Men was created in that era. And I think a lot of that Kennedy-era idealism really is underlines a lot of the X-Men universe.
Yeah. I mean, it's great because, as we said, both sides, both characters are very complex and multifaceted. Mm-hmm. But they still really draw the line, like...
Yeah. Magneto's
between
bad.
Good and evil. Yeah.
You know, Magneto's bad. What's interesting about this show, without really giving away too much of what happens down the road, is Magneto's not as bad as he is in the comics. And in the comics, Magneto has a lot of good and bad moments, but Magneto is really bad in the comics for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
In the show, Magneto is redeemed maybe a little quicker than you would expect.
Hmm.
He's way more human in the show than he is in some other portrayals of him.
Yeah.
But it's a great, like, character, like, dichotomy, dynamic between those two.
Right. And it starts to bring up the issue of racism in the show.
Right.
Which...
Is it racism or is it like speciesism?
Speciesism?
I don't know. It's hard to say exactly what ism it is. It's a bad ism.
It's prejudice.
Yes.
One way or another.
Right. It's fear. Right. I mean, yeah.
So it's basically just Magneto is not discriminating between types of humans, it seems like. He just wants all of them dead, whether...
You know, that's kind of weird to me. Would Magneto go back to his home country and kill all the humans there?
Presumably, yes.
Even the ones that, you know...
Like his family?
Yeah.
That he's so angry about?
Right.
Because they all died senselessly?
Yeah. Is he now just burned all bridges with humanity?
In short order, I think the answer is yes.
That's crazy. But maybe you're right. And we see a more human sort of racism, for lack of a better term, on display at the courtroom scene... with Beast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a raucous courtroom scene. The people in the galley are really hostile. They're throwing tomatoes at Beast.
Right.
The lawyer prosecuting Beast is really sarcastic and dismissive of Beast's pleas for understanding.
Mm-hmm.
The judge, too, has a lot of sort of, like, barely contained contempt for Beast,
mm-hmm.
you know, bordering on racism, which I feel might, in a really sneaky way, parallel a lot of experiences people, oppressed people have had with judges.
Right, in the real world.
In the real world.
Right.
That's some heavy shit.
It is. And, like, Beast's lawyer totally calls the judge out on it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
He outright says something like, you're just not giving him a fair trial because he's a mutant.
Yeah.
And the judge is like, oh.
He's real indignant.
Yeah, like, I would never do that. So then Beast wants to quote or paraphrase the bard.
Right. And, Beast goes on a soliloquy.
And, like, the judge is like,
very
well,
touching.
Of course I'll allow that here. I wouldn't want anyone to think I wasn't giving you a fair trial.
But then in the end, he's like, bail denied.
Yes.
And really, like, sneers at him.
Totally not a fair trial.
Yeah, and meanwhile, Wolverine and Cyclops are in the galley, too, watching all this.
Mm-hmm.
And Wolverine is not pleased. His Beast is being let out in shackles.
Mm-hmm.
Some guard pushes Beast on the ground with a big grin on his face. And Wolverine does not like that. He unleashes his claws in public. And Cyclops goes out of his way to stop him. He's, you know, horrified that Wolverine might do something crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to me, I'm only bringing up because this is where Sabretooth makes his crazy entrance.
Right.
We saw Sabretooth in the first episode, just a glimpse of him, but this is his proper introduction.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this ridiculous, like, 7'5", bestial man, more than Beast in a way.
He's got that huge,
his
like,
costume
fur
is baffling to
collar,
me.
And he's got, like, animal stripes on his legs. Is that clothing, or is that his pelt?
I don't know. I mean, no, it's definitely, it's a uniform. He's wearing a nude bodysuit, much like Jean Grey.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he looks crazy.
He is crazy.
Yeah, he's crazy. And immediately the guards start shooting him with laser beams.
Mm-hmm.
And he falls to the ground, stunned or really injured. And Cyclops is like, we gotta save him. And Wolverine is not about it.
Right. All of that is surprising because Cyclops just saw Sabretooth, like, bust in there and he's, like, smashing chairs
yeah.
and throwing people and
breaking the law in a courtroom.
In a really violent way.
Right.
And then his impulse is to save him, I guess.
Which is weird because he stops Wolverine from saving Beast.
Right.
Or defending the dignity of Beast, but Cyclops will, you know, shoot a bunch of armed guards with his eye beams to rescue Sabretooth.
He doesn't even know.
He doesn't know.
Wolverine's the only one amongst them that knows Sabretooth.
And Cyclops says, "Come on, he's gonna kill him." And Wolverine, in his one of his most badass moments, crosses his arms and says, "Good." Cyclops says, "What?" So Cyclops saves Sabretooth, which is crazy, and then they make a getaway.
Right,
you know,
they get him back to the mansion.
It's not like they're
mansion.
In a courtroom with a million cops everywhere. I don't know how they drag Sabretooth's, you know, huge body out of there.
Yeah, well.
Did Wolverine help Cyclops lift him to the Blackbird?
Yeah, who knows?
That wouldn't make sense either based on
one way or another.
Wolverine wanting to see him die in that moment.
Yeah.
They bring Sabretooth back to the X-Mansion to treat him. And it's pretty clear that Sabretooth is faking all his injuries. If you know anything about Sabretooth, he has the same healing factor as Wolverine.
Right.
So he's not that hurt. It's all this, like, dumb... I'm not really spoiling anything, but it's all this dumb, elaborate plan by Sabretooth to infiltrate the X-Mansion
mm-hmm.
and get information on the X-Men. Sort of at the behest of Magneto, I think. I could be wrong, but it doesn't matter because it's such a dumb plot point. Sabretooth is in the X medical bay wing of the mansion, and we see Wolverine sort of hovering above him, you know, unleash his claws like he's gonna kill him,
mm-hmm.
but really only chops his life support system.
Right, but then everybody gets really upset at
yeah.
him. Professor X comes in, and like all the other X-Men come in, and they're like, "What are you doing?
How dare you?"
They really don't give him a chance to explain himself.
Yeah.
He keeps like alluding to the fact that these guys, that like he has a history with Sabretooth, yeah. and he keeps being like, this guy is really dangerous. He shouldn't be here.
Yeah, this
and
isn't like, about me. This is
nobody
about this
asks
guy.
Him any kind of follow up questions. Yeah, like, Storm, what just do you mean? Storm, how do you know each other?
Yeah, Storm just outright accuses Wolverine of being the same guy. He's like, oh, you were just like him. You know, everyone was afraid of you when you came here.
Right.
And Wolverine just has this look on his face. He's like, and
which
then he
is
says,
a fair
get
point.
Out of my way.
You know, it's a fair point, but still, like.
Hear him out.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody trusts Wolverine. Wolverine, you know, do they not know that Wolverine is 200 years old and has lived, like, 7 lifetimes? And is way more experienced than any of them?
Yeah.
I mean, the trust on Wolverine is so low. I feel bad for him.
I don't feel bad for him. He also has a short temper, and he's does. Like,
yeah, but he's real
he's
heroic.
He's kind of a pill all the time.
Yeah,
he's not a real likable guy. But, like, on the surface,
but it's almost as if they don't see that Wolverine is this incredibly good-hearted superhero.
Yeah, he is.
Wolverine throws himself into situations, risking his own life and limb to save people for good causes. In a few scenes later, when they're fighting Magneto at a military base. Magneto says, like, I'm here to liberate mutant kind. And Wolverine outright says, we don't find nuclear missiles all that liberating.
Bub.
So that, it speaks to, like...
he calls people bub.
It speaks to, like, Wolverine... yeah, that is hilarious. It speaks to Wolverine's personality, that he's got a political point of view, that he understands that nuclear war is bad. He's not, like, some psycho. You know? He's, yeah. like, out there, like, he knows the difference between right and wrong. He knows... like, who the bad guys are, and he's there to stop them. He's very right. eager.
Well, this is why Wolverine is kind of a beloved character amongst...
Yeah, right. Well, he's one of the Marvel's top characters of all time.
Yeah, no. I mean, I feel like he was just an instant hit in, like, movies and cartoons and
stuff.
And
the comics,
like,
he was an instant hit. Yeah. He's
so,
a sensation.
Like, surly, but then on the inside, he's
got the heart of a hero.
Yeah.
The heart of gold. Yeah.
Exactly.
Just one more line. When they're about to fight Magneto, Wolverine confronts Professor X, and he gives him this deep stare, and he says, how come we gotta trash your old enemy, but we gotta go easy on mine? And Professor X just stares daggers back at him while this, like, heavy metal power chord plays on sustain.
Yeah, the instrumental there is really, really good.
Wolverine is just such a badass on this show, and I don't know, I just love that moment. It's one of my favorite lines in the show.
Yeah, and it, like, also kind of, the whole scene further exacerbates the relationship that's been boiling up with Cyclops and Wolverine.
Yeah.
Because, of course, Cyclops immediately takes Professor X's side, because kind of, like, sucks up to him all the time or something, but you know, he's really, like, against hearing out what Wolverine has been through with Sabretooth.
Yeah, no one's listening to Wolverine at all. I mean, and like we said, alluded to in another episode, it's clear that Wolverine is fairly new to the X-Men, and he's really down with the cause.
Yeah.
He's there to fight and be part of this, you know, militant mutant peace fighting force.
Right.
But, you know, just like, you know, Cyclops is a total, like, conformist wimp compared to Wolverine.
Right, that's the thing, is that
everyone
Wolverine
is just
like
you know, yeah, what were you
he's not just gonna take orders blindly.
Yeah.
And so, like, he's starting to, like, take Sabretooth out of the X-Mansion.
He knows better.
And he's like, he can't be here, you know? And Professor X even gives him an ultimatum. He's like, if you take Sabretooth out of here, don't come back. And
everyone is just so dumb.
Which is, like, really crazy. But, like, Wolverine, like, doesn't care at all. He just, like, goes about his business.
He knows better.
Yeah.
He literally, in these cases, Wolverine is right. And, you know, like we said in the other episode, Cyclops is the leader. Storm is second command. Wolverine really should be leading the team.
No, he shouldn't, though.
Why?
Because he lashes out at people like crazy. He's not a people person.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, he doesn't have good people politics.
Yeah, no. Not... because, you know...
his office politics in the X-Mansion have not done him any favors.
He has no water cooler talk.
He's like Dwight from The Office. He's just, he's too insane.
A little
insane.
Bit deranged. Yeah. But, you know, that's also something to be said, is that, like, we're saying that all the other X-Men are not giving him a chance and not listening to him, but he also is not volunteering a lot of excess information that he could be pushing a little harder to get out there. Like,
I would say that, like, Wolverine is a little bit emotionally damaged, and it hurts him to talk about his past, and so to keep pushing him isn't a good idea.
Right.
They're not being sensitive, and they're not being emotionally present for his needs. And, you know, they're just too quick to assume he's an asshole. I mean, which he is.
Right. But he's also being an asshole is okay. My point.
So, and then, like we said, they go to this military base that Magneto's trying to destroy. Magneto really ratchets up the tension. He launches some nuclear missiles. Where those nuclear missiles are aimed, we don't really know. It's not clear if the missiles are...
Well, some city... Apparently.
Well, that's what he wants to Cyclops do a alludes lot of to.
Destruction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're not quite sure because after the missiles launch, they kind of turn back on the base.
After Storm makes them.
No, that she actually intervenes after.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the missiles, I think Magneto wants to blow up this huge American military installation. Hmm. Anyway, so this leads to the segment where Storm saves the day.
Right. Professor X can see these nuclear warheads being launched, I guess, through Cerebro.
Right. And I want to talk about how Cerebro is different in the cartoon than it is in the movies.
It's super different. Yeah. I feel like in the movies, it's this mystical palace that nobody's right. allowed to enter. Whereas in the cartoon, it's like this schlubby office with like
right. it's a this bank computer of computers. Room. Yeah. It's like our apartment right now with this, our like, microphone.
Except we don't have the Dr. Octopus, like, head gear coming down from the ceiling.
He has Dr. Octopus technology attached to the Cerebro helmet that comes from the ceiling.
Right. And it's just, like, this room with no windows and a bunch of, like, old computers and, like, Jubilee's hanging out eating an ice cream
right. cone. And so Professor X, like, sees the nuclear missiles being launched and he... Let's Storm's original plan is to just sacrifice herself by, I guess, swooping the missiles into the air and exploding them and dying with the missiles. Like, right. she wants to kill herself. She doesn't want to.
She's willing to sacrifice right, herself.
Yes, right. Yeah. But Professor X is like, no, there's another way. Let Cerebro teach you how.
Open your mind, right. I think he says, right?
Yeah.
And then you see, like, the superimposed image of some computer chips over, like, Storm's brain, and she's like, I understand.
Yes,
and, like,
I understand.
Somehow that makes sense. Whatever.
Yeah, Storm then knows how to throw lightning at the missiles and reprogram the control chips.
So they, like, deactivate harmlessly and fall deactivate. Into the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
That makes a whole lot of sense.
Whatever. So Storm saves the day, and then...
She passes out in the sky.
She faints immediately because right. it's, like, too much effort.
Because mutant powers are really taxing to the female characters on this show, right. often.
Really, though, because Storm is fainting after using her powers. Later on, we're going to see Jean Grey do quite a lot of fainting from using her
Very
powers.
Very famously so, yeah.
Right. So, you know, minus one for feminism, I guess.
Well, Professor X, he has a few seizures and kind of...
That's true.
Passes out a little bit sometimes, too.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but yeah, it's kind of like a weird trope of the show that Storm and Jean Grey are quick to pass out or experience some moment of extreme anxiety or
distress or
something. Or distress, exactly.
Right. But, you know, I guess that's part of the multi-dimensional nature of their characters is right. that even though they're these super powerful mutants,
they have human emotions and fears and problems.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they're not actually invincible, which makes them more interesting.
And we'll actually get a little bit more insight into Storm's character in that respect in the next episode,
ooh.
Which is called Deadly Reunions.
That's right. This episode actually finishes with a to be continued.
Yes. Magneto's kind of on a hill threatening, talking to Xavier, assuming that Xavier's reading his mind. We don't know if that's the case.
Well, no, he's not, because he's wearing his helmet.
His helmet in this show does not block Xavier's telepathy.
Really?
Yes.
Then how come Xavier couldn't find him in the beginning of the episode when he's looking for him with Cerebro?
I don't know. Because Cerebro's a baffling MacGuffin that only works when it has to. And, you know, we've been watching the show on Hulu Plus or Prime, whatever it's called. And I just really like for the next episode, Deadly Reunions, the sort of screen grab teaser image is Rogue shooting Cyclops' eye beams out of her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my favorite images of the show. And I think a really good teaser for the next episode.
Yeah. So stay tuned. We'll be back next time with episode 4, Deadly Reunions.
I can't wait!
Me neither.